This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I'm just kidding.
The man you see and the place to be.
Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
So if it's too much for you and your big cock of a walk Knight to Columbus backpack.
When does it end, JR?
Bring the carriage back to the fucking thing. Then what do you want? What do you want?
When does it end?
You're making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers.
Party people in the place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts, and we have this is trash.
It's not Austin in LA, it's not Cabana in Chicago, it's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rivera. I'm with you on this Martin Luther King Day Monday. And, of course, this is our tribute episode to the great MLK, as always. And Scott Criscolo, I feel like this is one weekend we've hit an episode almost every year on the Monday.
I agree 100%, JR. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 510 of the longest running motherfucking goal defended. I feel like, let's be honest, we're pretty much royalty at this point in the podcast world. I feel like we should start, because this has to be, we may have to go back and document, but this is probably minimum. Now, this is what our 2011, so 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. This is our 8th January, because we started in February overall. So this is our 8th January. So I would say this is probably minimum our 5th Martin Luther King show.
Yeah,
I don't know if we've done every year.
I feel like we may have. I feel like we've said
we might have.
We'll have to ask Chad Campbell. He's our official podcast historian. So
exactly. But it's definitely a minimum of at least the last like 5 years. But anyway, I feel like we're at the point now where we should be like Vince. And before Raw, I think we should do a little MLK tribute for every podcast. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I believe this gentleman that we have this evening can voice it. I think you do an exceptional job. Who is that gentleman?
I'll be honest. I was close to terminating from his contract last night. I was close. but I didn't. Stay strong. But we'll see you again in 2 weeks' time. That could change. And that is the one and only voice of Greetings from Allentown. And you hear him here, of course, a couple times a month. Well, I guess maybe not a couple. We only record a couple times a month. But he's not on quite the Joe Dombrowski schedule. But here he is. It's Peter Winston. Peter, how are you?
This is the fourth time in your last 11 shows dating back to number 500. So
okay, there you go. More
I don't
than
know.
I'd like, but.
Yeah, I was on the Christmas, actually the fifth one, because two Saturday Night Main Events, the Christmas one as the effeminate cowboy, and this one. And you know, I honored Dr. King's legacy by attending Boston University, and let's watch some Saturday Night's Main Event, because that's what Dr. King would have wanted, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking
he
of
died for our sins for that reason.
Exactly. Speaking of Mr. Winston, your alma mater got canceled tonight. They were supposed to play tonight. They were supposed to play American, and American could not get in because of the weather, American University. So the game tonight got poo-pooed. So in fact, we're going to have inclement weather as part of the opening of our show this evening as well. I think it's a first in the history of the roster update house show schedule. But in any event, JR, it's fucking cold.
It is
usually
very
is.
Cold. Insanely cold.
And you know what's crazy? I was looking ahead at the rest of the week. The high today, I think around here, was I think like 14.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was like 4 here. I didn't ever see it get past like 4 or 5.
I mean, the wind cut it down, obviously. But on Thursday, I mean, it's supposed to gradually move up a little bit. And Thursday, it's supposed to be 50.
Yeah.
So in the span of like 72 hours, it's going to go up like 45 degrees. It's
which
like
is
ridiculous.
Good because it needs to – my driveway is literally – like BU and American could have played in my driveway. I mean, it's just a sheet of ice. And I'm not good with ice. Obviously, last year I fell and nearly snapped my ankle, like Sid. So my wife this year, it's a game changer. She bought me these like spikes that you put on the bottom of your boots. So it's like walking on ice skates, but I feel a lot better, a little bit safer. But no, it's ridiculous. I swear, I think today the high was 4, and it was, I looked like middle of the day when it's usually like at its peak warm, and it was negative 19 wind chill still. So it was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
My dad's windshield cracked from the cold. Oof. Across. And when I went to pick up a pizza for dinner, speaking of Sheriff Pete's, I pull up and there's this guy in the middle of the road. There's like a side road where the pizza place is, and his car was clearly dead. So one guy was trying to, you know, steer it, and the guy who looks like Sheriff Pete Schermark was trying to push it. So I'm like, these guys aren't getting anywhere. So I asked him, like, you need a hand. And just in like a minute and a half that me and this other guy pushed this car for this dude, like I was fucking frozen. My hands were like numb. It was crazy. It was insane out. And I'm hoping this is the coldest day of the year. I feel like we get like one of these a year, and I'm hoping this is it, and then we're done.
Yeah. But. I actually woke up this morning and I had to go out, de-ice the driveway because my wife had to work. And I looked at the temperature on my phone and it said 1 degree. And I updated it and I'm like, no, I can't be right. And it updated and it still said 1.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so it's just like that scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles when they're in the back of the truck. Like, how cold do you think it is? And then John Candy just says 1.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, and of course, then you get Aaron George. Ooh, well, it's negative 50 here, so whatever. But
oh, screw Celsius.
Screw Canada.
Imaginary temperature gauge.
Mm. But anyway, yeah, it's cold. I've been sick all week, so it's been a one for the books. But here we are.
Fortunately, tonight it's a sprint, not a marathon.
It is a sprint. So. It is a sprint because episode 510 brings us to a warm location as well. They were smart on January 7th, 1989.
Yes, they were.
So yeah, here we are almost to what 30 years to the day, right?
Exactly.
By 2 weeks. But
2 weeks about. Yes. This is, as JR mentioned, we begin a new year, gentlemen, year 5 of our, journey through, the Federation era as we begin 1989. And this was, Saturday night's main event from, January 7th, 1989. I don't know if this was taped. Let me see how far back.
It was taped December 7th, I believe. So yeah, it was a full month.
Wow. So happy birthday, JR.
I just turned 9. Eight.
There you go.
Eight.
So, wow. So this is a month old. And as it is at from the Sun Dome in Tampa, Florida, which I believe, guys, 3 years almost to the month, I think there was a Saturday night's main event there again as well.
Hmm.
Wasn't that the water slides episode where asshole Savage and asshole fucking Jesse tried to drown Elizabeth.
That is correct.
Yeah, I believe so. Yep. Yeah.
This is also the building where Andre turned on Hogan, I believe, in 87.
In 87,
yeah. This was definitely a regular stop for them, the Tampa Sun Dome. It was their southern jaunt.
Yes. So so there you go. So back in the day, Vince liked having warm locales for these December, January shows.
By the way, I will note there was a – so this is part of a larger taping as always. So Superstars, some primetime matches, challenge match. And one of the matches featured Big Boss Man defeating David Heath.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, to go on to become Gangrel.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to do Gangrel's music.
So that's going
to
be pretty early for him, right? He probably couldn't have started too much earlier than 88.
Yeah.
I know, right? I know. That's. I mean, you're talking, what, 7 years or longer than that? Well, 11 years since that gimmick, but probably.
Yeah, well, he's Vampire. Well, he's a jobber, you know. Like, Vampire Warrior is what, like, early 90s ECW / job duty. Yeah. Then he's one of the. Who was he under the hood? The Phantom or whatever? Black Phantom and WWF.
Black Phantom, so, yeah.
Looks like he started in. What the fuck is the date? Debut 88. So this would have been his first year. Trained by Boris Malenko.
Boris Malenko. All right. Now, speaking of cold weather, look at these three locales for the actual roster on this evening. The Civic Center in Butte, Montana.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So we don't have a full card, according to Graham on the history of WWE.com, but it included Rick Rude and the Bolsheviks. Come on, Winston. You'd want to sit there in Butte, Montana to see the Bolsheviks.
So I always loved when Howard Finkel, when he would read over, like, who's coming to the Cumberland County Civic Center and say, the Bolsheviks. It's like, who is getting up off the couch to buy tickets because of that?
Well, maybe if you just really hate Russia.
Yeah, it's true.
I have also, to boo them.
Yep. Also on this day, and this is actually fitting, there was a house show scheduled for the arena in Winnipeg canceled due to inclement weather. Oh,
there you go.
Now, I don't know. I'm not going to realize JR has noticed in the past. I think every city is 10 minutes away from another. I don't know how far apart Winnipeg and Butte, Montana is, but I'm sure it was, you know, the weather was comparable. So I'm sure that they battled through the Butte, Montana house show and said, fuck this shit. We're not going to Winnipeg. The other house show was probably not in as bad weather for January of 89. The Myriad Convention Center in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. So I'm sure it was cold, but you know, I don't feel like we don't see a lot of snow in that part of the of the country. But anyway, here's the card. Tim Horner pinned Danny Davis. I would drive to Oklahoma City for that over Winnipeg. the Twin Towers, the Big Boss Man and Akeem, which JR will be enjoying quite a bit of on this evening, defeated the Young Stallions, which, Peter, we're not going to be enjoying much of at all anymore. Andre the Giant defeated Jake the Snake Roberts via disqualification. We'll hear that combo quite a bit over the next several months. Hercules pinned Ted DiBiase.
Wow. So, that's rare.
Yeah, right.
The Brainbusters defeated the Rockers. We're going to get more than our share of those awesome combinations. The Red Rooster pinned the Blue Blazer in a battle of colored gimmicks. And Hacksaw Jim Duggan defeated Dino Bravo in a flag match was your main event.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. So that's where the actual roster was on this day. So whoever was in Winnipeg got to go hang out at the Moose Jaw Cafe or Moose Jaw Bar and Grill. And did a few shots. So your broadcast team in Tampa was, of course, Vince McMahon, Vince Kennedy McMahon, and Jesse the Body Ventura. This is the – might be – we're going to peter on probably a lot this time, JR, because this might have been the busiest year for Stargate's main event. I think there's like eight?
Well, they have the summer one for the first time.
Yep.
And
there's a lot of them.
And is this the year, too, that there's less house shows, right, because they take the summer off?
Yes,
yeah, so we have no house show from April till September. So
yeah, I think the garden was getting renovated.
Yeah.
So we'll have it'll be a quick summer in terms of shows.
Yeah, it'll be a much shorter year overall than 88 was for sure. I mean, because we go after Mania, it's pretty much house show, two Saturday's main events, SummerSlam, and then it's September. So it goes quick. Yeah. So we'll see as we get there. But yeah, so we head inside, and then we get promos from the Ultimate Warrior, Honky Tonk Man, Jimmy Hart, Brutus Beefcake, Akeem and Slick, and Hulk Hogan. And then our opening animation brings us to Vince and Jesse, who kick things off. We go backstage with Mean Jeans with Outlaw Ron Bass, who's confident tonight and not worried at all about potentially losing his hair. We then get clips from TV from the summer when Brutus and Bass had their throwdown that ended with Bass slicing Brutus Beefcake up with the spur that cost him the title match at SummerSlam. Jeans then talks to Beefcake and wants to remember what happened when he gets revenge tonight by cutting the Outlaw's hair. So that does bring us to our opening bout. Brutus the Barber Beefcake taking on Outlaw Ron Bass in a haircut match. And this feud has been going on for a while, like we said, since the summer. And I thought it was smart of them to do the clips like they always do when they start his main events. Refresher for the fans that maybe pop in and out, maybe new, looking for Saturday Night Live. So I think it's always smart to kind of, you know, not assume that everyone knows what's going on. Bass heads out the whip as Jesse blames Brutus for all their issues. Interesting match here with the gimmick on the line. Beef is stressed out to a pop as Jesse says this all comes to an end tonight. Bass chokes Beefcake with Betsy off the bell, but Brutus fights free and beats on Bass. That is a lot of bees until he drives him to the floor. Brutus keeps swatting at Bass, keeping him outside while he tries to get in. Bass goes back in finally, but Beefcake slugs away with a flurry of right hands, both standing on and on the mat. Bass turns the tide, moves through some offense, focuses on the abs and the lower back, kicks him to the floor. Beefcake climbs back in, but Bass stays all over him, beating on the midsection. Jesse makes some Vince toupee jokes as Bass drops Beefer with a pile driver, then gets up during the cover to talk some shit. Bass hotshots Beefcake across the top rope, but again picks up Beefcake at one. Bass crunches Beefcake with a clothesline for two and grabs the hedge clippers before realizing he didn't win. Beefcake ducks a clothesline and gets a sleeper for the win as Bass passes out. Beefcake grabs the clippers, and after a break, we see he's working at work, sharing the hair with scissors and a buzzer. That continues for a while until Bass is totally bald, and then he wakes up and flips out. That's pedestrian, pretty fun in spots, but paint by numbers overall. The end was silly, too. Bass looked like a fucking idiot. He picked Beefcake up twice and then thinks he gets a three when it's clearly only a two. It just looked real stupid here. And for guys that feuded for a while, It was not great chemistry at all with these guys, but it's good enough to end the feud. And Bass getting shaved is a good payoff, and it reminds us of Beefcake's gimmick origins, of course, when he shaved Adrian Adonis's head at WrestleMania 3, so nearly 2 years ago. And it's payback for the SummerSlam stuff. So overall, the package was fine. The match, again, was hit or miss, but it ends things, and Beefcake can move on maybe to something more substantial. I went 2 stars, and we can talk about it in a minute, but I also believe this is it for Bass for us guys. So, Scott, what did you think of the match?
I actually didn't like it. I liked it even less than you did. I gave it 1.5 stars. Yeah, I was kind of perplexed because obviously these guys had been working for, what, 7 months? And there are certain instances, and we've talked about this often, JR, and Peter, when you're on for these shows, about the different ways a match works between two guys from TV as compared to not TV. And we'll get more into that in a match a few ticks from now. But still, even if you're normally working an 11-minute match at the Garden, and you're only working your official match time was 7:40, which is not short. So in the grand scheme of things, these guys probably should have had a better match. They weren't given like TV time, like 2.5 minutes. They were given just under 8, which even for the Garden is an average length show, an average length match. So kind of surprised that they looked pretty awful. You could pretty much tell. I mean, Ron Bass's hair looked out of control. He may get worse hair, which is probably why he loses it later, because his hair was like totally out of control. It was, you know, it's like all over the place. So you can kind of tell that he was probably going to lose. This is a big win for Beefer, continuing his ascension, and he's actually in line for a pretty big 1989. But for the most part, Peter, I agree with Justin. The chemistry should have been better between these two guys, but Bass does look like a tool, big time. Typical heel stuff, but kind of takes away from the match, and they definitely should have been better.
I'll just note real quick before you go, Peter, that we will see Bass once more, Scott. We'll see him on our next show. Peter, you won't get to talk about him, so if you have any thoughts or memories on Ron Bass, you can share them here. But we'll see him at MSG, and then he's around till March, but not much on TV or anything.
I think he's in the Rumble, too.
Oh, right. Yeah, he's on the Rumble yet. You're right.
Yeah, okay. He's in the Rumble.
I should shut up then. Yep. We have a ways to go. But you won't. You can still talk about him, Peter.
This is it for you, Peter.
Well, you know, I'll deliver a eulogy for Outlaw Ron Bass's profound WWF career. I kind of like him on the rewatches, mainly from house shows, because he never had a lot of good angles. Mm-hmm. Like, guys would leave or either be lazy, like the JYD feud in 88. Mulligan leaves on him up front, so he kind of flounders through the first year. At the time, though, for this feud, I really wanted him to die because I was so into this feud as a Brutus fan. So, as you said, we're going to be seeing a lot of him in 89, so I'll have to expound upon that. My father, I think I mentioned to you in kind of preparing for this, he screwed up taping the show, and I was so furious that I didn't get to see this until a long time afterwards, because anybody who listens to Greetings from Valentine knows that I'm a huge fan of hair matches, and the WWF like would never have this sort of stuff, so it's very unusual. One more thing about Ron Bass. I really like his hat. He had a very nice cowboy hat. It was nice and simple, and nobody collects Ron Bass cowboy hats like the way they do Ric Flair robes, so I think, guys, if you're looking for something affordable to get into, Ron Bass cowboy hats is the place to go.
Well, maybe we should get the cowboy in on that. You know, I was wondering if you were going to say you destroyed anything when you were upset. So my cousin, when he recorded WrestleMania 9, I don't know if the cable company had something going on where they were like kind of sending like a scramble. So like a very slight, like discolored line was at the very top of it. And he got so mad he smashed his VCR, and his parents had to buy him a new one.
Jesus!
Oh, and it wasn't even that bad. I think I still have the fucking tape. It wasn't even that bad. It was just like a little, like you could tell they were probably trying to deter pirating, you know. So it was like a very thin line across the top that's like just discolored. But he was very angry.
The only time that ever happened to me was for they were showing me the movie Green Card starring Gerard Depardieu. In 1991, when I had ordered the 1991 Great American Bash, and upon further review, I probably should have just let them, you know, have me watch Green Card instead of that fast show. I don't know if you caught this in Beefcake's promo before the match, but he said, remember the face of the barber. And I'm like, yeah, because we're going to need help rebuilding it in about 18 months. So remember all the structure. Vince had a line where he said, this is not a no-holds-barred matchup when Bass was choking him with the whip. And I thought, well, of course it isn't, Vince. I don't see Zeus or Lugwrench Perkins walking around here. So, you know, whatever. It was also very nice of Bass to name. He named his Spurs. Did he name one of the Spurs Black Bart, or was it just Bart?
I think it was Bart.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, it would be nice he named it after his old rival and partner from the other promotion.
Known as a Big Train Bart at World War III-95.
But yeah, kind of a dumb banana peel finish that made Bass look stupid. But it really doesn't matter if he's on his way out the door.
Right.
It's about making the barber look strong. And
but
Jesse,
it didn't.
Well, yeah, I guess
he had him beat twice.
Yeah.
Sorry, it'll make it worse. Like, if you don't care about Bass and you want the barber to get the win, then you know, just have him fucking beat him. Like, don't let Bass look like you had him beat twice.
Yeah, maybe he hadn't given notice, and I don't know. I just think that sometimes they didn't make as much use of Bass as they could have.
Right.
I'm not saying, like, turn him babyface or something, but I don't know. It seems like he may have been underutilized. But the haircut, the best part of that is Jesse getting all, like, how did he get electricity down to ringside? Because Jesse doesn't know about extension cords. One and a half stars. Yeah.
or did it have a plug? I didn't even notice.
I think it had a cord.
Bass, and I agree with you. Some of his house show stuff has been better, and when he gets a chance, like I think it was that Tito match, right, that we saw back in '87, that was real, real good. But yeah, other than that, he just doesn't ever get anything worthwhile to like sink his teeth into to really let go and show what he's got. But an issue I do have with him is he's very into the stalling. So we've seen a lot of these house show matches too, where he'll stall, he'll talk to the crowd, he'll run his mouth, which can be effective. And I get it. It's a house show, you know, whatever, he's used to arena shows. But like when you're watching a televised 2.5 hour house show with some of the matches we've watched, like to then suffer through Ron Bass talking to the crowd for like 6 minutes can be a lot. But anyway, he's just one of those guys, pros and cons. Gene's backstage with the Twin Towers and Slick, who talk about ridding the WWF of Hulk Hogan. Slick says Boss Man is here because Hulk is a habitual rule breaker and needs to keep an eye on him. Gene is in with Hulk Hogan and Miss Elizabeth. Hogan says he's battled the odds before, and with Liz and Lady Luck in his corner, he could take on anyone. Randy Savage pops in. Hogan says when the chips are down, his mega power partner will come through, and Savage says he'll have his back tonight. Brings us to our marquee match of the evening, Hulk Hogan taking on the African Dream, Akeem. Big time dream match for me. It starts hot as Big Boss Man Akeem and Slick dance out to Jive Soul Bro. That is kind of a fun and different feud for Hogan. The whole thing has felt fresh with Boss Man and Slick. You know, he's kind of away from Bobby. He's away from Jimmy. Like he's in there with Slick, which is new. We haven't really seen him mixing up with his guys yet. And being there with some, you know, new guy like Boss Man is getting put over strong. Like the whole thing just feels different. The title's not really in the mix. So it's been kind of a cool Hogan feud. Hogan and Liz power out to a huge pop. We see Savage watching the match with Mean Gene backstage. Akeem dances as Boss Man clears out, but Hogan dodges a charge and chucks Slick into the Dream as we get going. Hogan unloads with right hand, slides outside, and lays into Boss Man for throwing Slick into him as well. Back inside, Hogan peppers away and tries for a slam, but that fails. Akeem clubs him, but comes up empty on a charge, and Hogan gets right to work. Hulk lays in some chops and clotheslines and keeps the Boss Man at bay. Akeem gets a glimmer of offense, but Hogan comes right back and goes to strikes. Akeem collides a Boss Man, and Hogan mocks his dancing as he keeps emptying the tank of strikes. Hogan charges Akeem, but pulls the ref in between them, and he drops hard. Boss Man comes in, and we get a double team beatdown with the stick, as we also see a guy in the front row who has no shirt on, which is interesting. We cut backstage.
I saw him.
Oh, geez, like, what are you doing? We cut backstage where Savage says Hogan will be okay. Back in the ring, the beating rolls on with splashes and nightstick shots. Liz runs backstage and runs through gorilla position in the hallway looking for Randy. After a break, Akeem is in control as the ref wakes up. Liz finds Savage and begs him, but Macho says Hogan will be okay. And Gene overacts while watching. I mean, you would think Hogan was getting like stabbed to death in an alley with the way Gene is acting. Liz runs away and back to ringside as Savage Chase put. Hogan hulks up through punches and unloads clotheslines with right hands, drilling Slick as well. Savage and Gene are happy as Hogan's battering all three men all around the ring. Hogan hits Akeem with a big boot and slams him to a big pop. Bossman smashes Hogan with the nightstick as he hits the ropes, and that draws a DQ. The Twin Towers get back to double teaming, and then they cuff Liz, and that finally brings out Savage to clean house. Savage gets into it with Elizabeth as she tries to check on Hogan. And that's that. That's a pretty fun Haas match with the fun storyline of Savage woven in. I thought that was nicely done. Showed the sowing some seeds of issue with Macho baked in here, and they did it in a unique way. Like, this is a cool way to do it. There was we didn't get like a miscommunication where they punch each other. You know, like, it was done really sharply. Like, if you're really paying attention, obviously you know what's going on. Savage is being a dick and basically saying Hogan can handle himself and I'm going to play coy. And it's not until Liz gets in trouble that he comes out. So I thought this was well done. Akeem barely got any offense in, but he's fun as always with his bumping and selling. And that was good stuff across the board. It kept the feud simmering. Again, the storyline outshone the match, but that was perfectly fine in the setting. So I went 2 stars, Peter.
I don't know. Speaking of weird people in the crowd, and I don't know if Chris Golo saw this, but there was somebody who was wearing a Florida 22 shirt. Now, that would be Emmett Smith for the time period. So, if you saw that, I like that guy. Okerlund getting rendered by Savage was a little weird, where they go to that room with the odd lighting. It's like, why don't you flip on a switch, for God's sakes? That was like false imprisonment of the of poor Mean Gene. It was surprising how this was all Hogan in terms of the offense, but it was really just the Towers cheating. And they might be the best. I mean, we just did the tag team vote, Place to Be Nation. I had them in the top 25 because I loved the Twin Towers, probably the best team where both guys are over 350.
Mm-hmm.
And God help me if I'm blanking on another team that's in their league. One little Easter egg, I've probably watched this Saturday Night's Main Event 5 times in the last couple of years that I've never noticed before. When Liz goes back to Gorilla and she's like looking around for help, the one guy standing there is Sam Houston. So she just keeps on walking because she's been watching the product the last 2 years.
Right. She's like, you're worthless. See ya.
But this was, you know how every president likes to have like a doctrine dating back to Monroe. You had like the Bush Doctrine, every single one of them. This was the birth of the Macho Doctrine, which was, I will only interfere in foreign affairs when Elizabeth is in danger.
Right.
So mm-hmm. So when Hogan's in trouble, he's kind of established that precedent. It's just one small little bit of the amazing storytelling with this whole mega powers thing. But I had to notice other stuff, too, like Liz took her shoes off. So for the foot fetish people out there, that was a good thing. And also, very dangerous, considering that Bell Phillips was at ringside. So,
well, if Moxley took his boots off, that's no.
Yeah, she had the stockings on, so Mel was okay.
Somebody also said that Liz was in trouble, and I thought, well, it's a good thing they don't mean trouble the way Dr. Houseman, or whatever his name was, in Dirty Dancing. Like, I know you're not the one who got Elizabeth in trouble.
Elizabeth in trouble.
Took her to see a butcher. 1.5 stars, but actually 2 for the greater story because, I mean,
right.
Mega Powers, you can't do any better than that. Like, from WrestleMania 4 all the way up through this and then beyond, oh, it's so good.
Looking ahead, actually, you mentioned it, Peter. I actually had, of course, I had the Twin Towers in my – I didn't have them as – I had mine – I haven't been in the top 50 of the Twin Towers, and they deserve that. Yeah, I was kind of perplexed watching this match too, at the extensive off Hogan put in. You would have thought that, I mean, other than the double team mugging that he got dealt with in the middle of the match without with the referee out, it was a ton of offense for Hogan, which kind of surprised me. Hey, you know what? Savage was right, though, because Hogan ended up fighting back and taking control of the match again. So, see, he didn't need his help. No. you miserable prick. No. Obviously, we need to start thinking about this. It comes from the weird looks we saw at Survivor Series after the hug heard around the world or seen around the world. More for Hogan, though. Big spot for Akeem. I'm trying to think. Did we see him on the last? He wasn't on the last Saturday Night's main event. We did not see him at the house show. When did we see him last? Oh, he fought, last time we saw him on our here on our show, JR. He beat SD Jones at the November house show. But this is bigger for Akeem, and this is a big spot. You know, everybody laughed at the gimmick, but here he is taking on the man right now. So good spot for Akeem, but sadly he didn't get as much offense as he should have. I don't think Hogan should have had that much wherewithal. But the match kind of laid out. I gave it 2 stars. The match laid out the way it should have. Your time was 8 minutes even, so decent amount of time for a Saturday's main event. But really, they didn't even book that right because, yeah, Savage didn't go out to save Hogan when he got beat up, but Jesse made a good point again. He goes, well, then what if Earl Hebner got up and Hogan got disqualified and everybody probably would have got mad?
Right.
So, you know, hey, you know what? It's all about patience, right? Hogan will battle back. He always does. And then he did. So it looks like the idiot, you know, being Gene and Vince do. So, but I agree with you, JR, that it's good to go a different route than the usual, oh, I accidentally punched you, that we usually get.
Right, I mean, we kind of get that with them coming, but at least this was a little bit more cerebrally done.
It was.
I like that part of it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. It's just funny that there's really no way to do it without the bad guy still coming out looking smarter. But
Well, because of Hogan, you know, Hogan can't lose. So it's like, ideally what you would have done, if you really wanted to paint Savage, see, Hogan screws himself, right? Because he wants to look like the good guy in all this, but he also doesn't want to lose or show ass too much. So if you really want to make it effective, you have the Towers beat him down and then beat him, right? And then you can say, well, Savage hung him out the dry, and then he lost the match because of it. But
right, but you didn't have that, happening. So no. Again, 2 stars. I thought Akeem looked good otherwise. I'd like to focus on him because Hogan's Hogan. He looks the same all the time. And we're starting to get it, and now Jesse finally says it. As the calendar page turns, Jesse says for the first time, something smells fishy. And, of course, you know, Vince, his usual blustery way. But here's Jesse saying, nah, something's not right here. And he makes a point to say it again when we get to the interview later. But, something's definitely rotten in Denmark from the beginning, at least in Jesse's eyes. But Hogan gets the win because God forbid. But, if you really wanted Savage to come off looking like a douche, Hogan should have lost. But and that's where we see a lot of pitfalls. When we get to our big Mania preview roundtable show, JR, we'll delve more into this because it continues how this feud sadly paints itself into a myriad of corners for a lot of reasons. But I thought the match was solid. I gave it 2 stars. And again, I thought Akeem looked pretty good in a big spot for him coming off the new gimmick. So why don't we take a quick break? Because the last three matches kind of motor through pretty quickly. Not bad so far, JR. A lot of storyline advancement so far.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Start to the year, and obviously we're focusing on things, ending one feud and really ramping up a second one. So we'll see how we finish things up.
Exactly. Peter, pretty good so far?
Yeah, very interesting first two matches, and I hope that it at least keeps up somewhat as we head to the back end. Yep.
Yep. So we got 3 matches to go, including a Intercontinental Championship match. And a couple of kind of pseudo enhancements. But anyway, more to come from myself, JR, and Peter. First, a break. Caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royal. It's the one in our blood. That kind of love just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB in Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
Get ready to bow to the master. Yeah, boy. Can try and hold me down if you want to. All the garbage I've been through, think I'm scared of you? I'll kill you. Don't gotta care in the world of hell with the world.
All right, Nation, we're back. Take a look at the January 1989 Saturday Night's Main Event. And I mentioned earlier that I wanted to almost cancel Peter Wince's contract last night as I continue to wait for the star that is Tom Brady to fall from the sky. And 1 year, it's coming.
Not going anywhere.
Shut up. Shut up. So as you can hear, the song Under Us, also a star that's waiting to fall. Waiting for Star to Fall by Boy Meets Girl, one of our top 10 songs on the evening this week in the Billboard Top 10. And that means it's time for Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR, and maybe we'll get lucky in 2 weeks that Hogan will get mugged by Talib and no one will call it.
My only hope is that we bookend this stupid dynasty with the Rams ending Brady's career by tearing his ACL or something.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Anyway.
We'll make it all worth it.
Exactly. All right, so number one, as we begin the Pop Culture Corner, quickie this week. Of course, since this is a Saturday, a brand new Billboard Hot 100 came out on this date, January 7th, 89, and Poison's Every Rose Has Its Thorn, still number one, was number one on our last show, three straight weeks at number one. Continuing on, number two is still Bobby Brown's My Prerogative, Two Hearts by Phil Collins up to number three, Giving You the Best That I Got by the sultry Anita Baker stays at four, In Your Room by The Bangles moves up to number five. Don't Rush Me by Taylor Dane at number six. Of course, a song you just heard, Waiting for a Star to Fall. Boy Meets Girl at number seven. Look Away by Peter Winston's favorite group, Chicago.
Yes.
Because he looked like he'd be in Chicago. At number eight, Armageddon It by Def Leppard, which JR and I are hoping the Rams do in Atlanta. Armageddon It. At number nine, Smooth Criminal. Ooh. There's a Patriots joke there somewhere. at number 10. So
Blatant Criminal.
Yes. So there is your top 10 on the Billboard chart on this day, January 7th, 1989, and Poison's Every Rose Has Its Thorn is still number one. Believe it or not, first weekend of the year and no movies came out the night before. So, JR, you are reserved from having to read any foreign names or foreign directors. But I'm sure it's everyone's favorite foreign movie. So we'll move on from that. Speaking of the Patriots, they were not in the 1988 NFL playoffs because they suck. And JR and I kind of wish it goes back to that. The previous weekend was divisional playoff round. And Peter Winston, I think we mentioned this. Last weekend was New Year's Eve, 1988, in the two divisional playoff games. Soldier Field in Chicago infamously known as the Fog Bowl.
Yes.
And the Chicago Bears beat the Philadelphia Eagles 20-12. Can you believe this? Randall Cunningham in that fog threw for 407 yards in that garbage, in that soup.
In 1988, that's very impressive.
He threw for 100, and of course, Keith Jackson, one of the best tight ends of that era, caught 142 yards. But the Bears won it 20-12. Also that day in Cincinnati, the Bengals, before they were a bunch of criminals, smooth criminals, beat the Seahawks 21-13. The next day, New Year's Day, 1989, the Bills beat Houston 17-10, while the Niners blew out Minnesota 34-9. So the next day, January 8th, would be the AFC Championship, the Bengals and Bills from Cincinnati, and then the NFC Championship, the 49ers and Bears from Soldier Field in Chicago. So we'll check that out the following week, Jared. We'll talk about it at the Rumble. On the Frozen Pond in hockey on this evening, 8 games on tap. Sadly, our beloved Boston Bruins took it on the chin to the scumbag piece of trash Montreal Canadiens. The final 3-1. Mr. Winston, your lone Bruins goal was Randy Burridge.
Oh.
Randy Burridge. Asshole Chris Chelios, asshole Brian Skrudland, and asshole, I think it's Peter Svoboda.
Yeah.
With the goals for the piece of shit Canadiens. Sorry, Aaron. Any other cool guys? Let's see. Mr. D'Amato's Rangers with a 5-1 win over the Islanders. And Mr. Schirmacher's Blackhawks lose 6-3 to Washington. The standings, Red Wings lead the Norris with 44 points. Calgary leads the Smythe with 60. How about this for a duo, Peter? Flames beat Edmonton 7-2 that night. Pair of goals apiece for Doug Gilmore and Tale Fleury.
Oh, wow.
Calgary. Also, look at all these studs for Calgary that scored goals. Al McGinnis, Neuendijk. That Calgary team was fucking good.
Yep.
Wow. There you go, Mr. Kelly Nelson's Flames. Canadians leading the Adams with 62 points, and the Caps and Rangers were tied in the Patrick with 50 points. In the NBA on this evening, I don't believe any of our locals were in action. It looks like, nope, Bruins, Celtics and Lakers both had the day off. The high scorer for the NBA on this evening, a gentleman by the name of Willie Anderson of the San Antonio Spurs, back when they were just moderately mediocre, with 36 points as the Spurs defeated the Golden State Warriors by the score of 104 to 102. And I think that was it for all the other locals. Let's see, Nets and yep, that's it. And finally, in the news on this day, there was a death on January 7th, 1989, a huge historical death. He was the 124th emperor of Japan. He reigned from Christmas Day 1926 until his death on this date, January 7th, 1989. The guy who was the catalyst for the attack on Pearl Harbor and World War II, at least in the Pacific, Emperor Hirohito of Japan died at the age of 87.
Of course, he'd be attempted to be immortalized by Kenzo Suzuki, whose original name was Hirohito when he was supposed to debut in Raw.
That's correct, yes.
Well, if he was 87, at least it wasn't a surprise attack.
Yes, he'd attack him from behind. So, yes, and he was succeeded by some Akihito, who probably also was a tag team partner. But anyway, he died on this date, January 7th, 1989, at the age of 87. And that is your Pop Culture Porner. Back to Tampa, Florida.
I thought you said it was going to be quick. All right, here we go. Gene is in the back with Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart. Honky brags about being the greatest. Jimmy says Warrior stole the belt from them, and Honky will make history as the first person to win the IC title a second time. Gene's then with Warrior, who does his Warrior things. Similar to Bass and Beefcake, it's like we're in this universe, we're wrapping up stuff that hasn't been wrapped up yet from the summer. I feel like we've moved on elsewhere, but for whatever reason, and for Saturday's main event, they want to kind of blow this off for the NBC universe. That's how it feels. Like, this one has felt like it's been cooked for a while, and here we are still going. Honky and Jimmy smugly hit the ring. They aim to take back their gold. Jesse says Honky has had time to prepare this time. Warrior chugs out. The crowd's all fired up for his arrival. Honky bails. A Warrior chases him down, presses him down the aisle, and chucks him into the ring. Warrior mauls Honky, takes a whack at Jimmy. Warrior unloads strikes in the corner, but whiffs on a dive and careens into the turnbuckles. Jimmy runs a distraction. Honky batters Warrior with the megaphone. Honky dances and kicks away with a soft shit offense. Warrior finally powers up and swats him off, but comes up empty on an elbow. Warrior fends off the challenger again, heats up and mows through him. Eats knees on a splash as Honky again, as always, finds a way to stay alive. But is short-lived this time as Warrior comes right back again and hits the splash for the win. Not much here. Honky clearly doesn't have much left in the tank when it comes to any kind of believable offense. And just nothing looks nothing believable at all with him against Warrior, like at all. Warrior looks good, but he needs better opponents. Honky's finally dispatched, hopefully for good. We need someone capable to go against Warrior that looks like he can actually do some damage to this guy. You know, they tried a little bit here and there, but Honky just doesn't have what it takes to be a credible challenger. So we need something else. I went a star and a half just for Warrior's energy, but Honky, it's time to move his ass down the ladder, Scott.
Yes, JR, I gave this a star. It was not very good. Your match time 5:07, and that was not by accident. Honky's baked. In the time that he was the Intercontinental Champion, the roster just started obviously getting fleshed out. A lot of the older, hosers were expelled out the door, and we were getting some fresh blood and some really good, solid talent. And we see a couple of those guys tonight, and this is just not. This isn't good for Honky. Let's put it this way. We all know what he did to Vince in keeping the Intercontinental title. Let's just say that it was time to pull out the checkbook and start paying the bills for getting what he got. Because at this point, the janitor, the catering guy, the fucking lighting crew, everybody's lining up to get back. So this is pretty much it. I'm curious to see what Honky's path is for the rest of 89. Because he's looking pretty haggard here. The promos are stale. The gimmick's stale. I mean, as you mentioned, the offense is stale. I mean, it's all just garbage now. And the crowd is pumped for Warrior. I mean, he's a great character. The kids love him. You know, the colorful tights, the colorful face paint, the things on his arms. He's a great gimmick and he's a great character for the kids. But for some of the older fans that look more than that into things than that. We need to see some more substance. And in his defense, Honky just doesn't bring that substance. So hopefully on our next show in a couple weeks, we will see somebody that will give him some substance, Peter. But right here, this is a good way to just shut the door on this and move on.
Did I guess I might have missed this in the pre-match interview. Did Jimmy Hart say that he would be the first two-time Intercontinental Champion?
Actually, Jesse said that to Vince.
Oh, well, geez, Jesse. Somewhere I'm picturing Pedro Morales, Don Morocco, and Tito Santana all sitting on a couch, all getting up at the same time and saying, what the fuck? Seriously,
yes.
Like, what about us?
Yeah.
There was a tweet probably about a week ago that said, that asked, name an athlete who had a career year that was an outlier to everything else they ever did. And it was inspired by Brady Anderson's birthday with his, 50 home run year. I answered with 1992 Vladimir Vrazichka, 1961 Norm Cash, and 1987 Honky Tonk Man. Because it's so far out of line from everything else that he ever did. Now, I can't speak too much to the Stampede stuff, 86 and before, but I mean,
it wasn't that good. I mean, you could whatever. Unless it's some expert that really has dove into it, but I cannot imagine it comes close to his 87 work.
The Memphis stuff before that wasn't even that good either.
Right. He just felt so far away from being that guy who's headlining B shows. Like at this point, I wouldn't trust him to headline C shows, like charity events at like the Reading Mass VFW Hall or anything like that. I mean. And seeing him in there with the Warrior and the benefit of hindsight of knowing these two guys and their personalities, all I see is just two assholes who hate working with each other, making each other crazy due to an insane styles clash that just is never going to work. Warrior can't even do his finisher on Honky because he'd be like, if you grab my nuts when you press me above your head, I'm going to fucking kill you. And that was why they had to do – what did he win with, shoulder block or splash?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so –
shoulder block.
I don't blame Honky either because I've seen too many nut sacks get grabbed by the Warrior. The only reason I give this half a star is I like the moxie of Jimmy Hart with his little bit of interference, but – yeah, this was not good, and I'm glad that hopefully this is the final page in this book.
November should have been. Instead of that stupid Super Ninja shit, they should have just done Honky there and blown it off and just been done with it and give Warrior someone a little better. Maybe, you know, we know where he's headed, right, with the Heenan. Maybe you give him Haku here or something. You know, someone from the Heenan family here to kind of start to inch toward that instead of just this again, just edging on. And, yeah, that it's funny because – you know, Scott, we kind of coyly tracked Honky in 87 and being like, I want to see, you know, does this held up? Maybe we were wrong all these years. And no, he just goes off the cliff. It's like he had a deal with the devil for 87 because as soon as the page turns to 88, even with the same opponent, it's like even his Savage matches like in 88 just go off the cliff. Like so I can't even say like, oh, well, he was carried by Savage and Steamboat in 87 and that makes it stand out because even his match with Jake at 3 is pretty good. And, like there's a lot of stuff in there. And yes, he was fighting, you know, top level talent, but we watched the matches. It wasn't all Savage and Steamboat. Like Honky was carrying his end in those matches fairly well. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if he just got lazy. I don't know if we just caught up to him and he got too sticky. I don't know what it is, but yes, there was that stretch of 87 where his stuff is like, they must've been excited. They must be like, wow, we got a top level heel. Look at this fucking guy. And then all of a sudden he's like, nope, no, he sucks. <It's>
like, yeah.
I mean, you can draw a shaky line to his competition. You can say, well, in 88, now he's fighting Warrior and Beefcake, and, you know, that's not quite Savage and Steamboat. But, again, it's him, too, you can see. So he plays a role in there somewhere, wherever it lies. But anyway, so that's that. Gene's with Slick in the Towers. They're yucking it up and celebrating their actions from earlier. Jesse's in with Bobby Heenan and the Red Rooster. We're talking about how Bobby took a wrestler with limited abilities and made him a contender and undefeated.
To his face.
Oh, he's right there. Oh, it's so great. It's such a fucking, like, backhanded slap. I took this loser, is basically what he's saying. Rooster's just incredulous as Bobby whacks him with backhanded comments, takes full credit for all of his success. Just great. So here we go. As Tito Santana takes on the Red Rooster. Rooster's just a mess. They're making him look like a clown that Bobby's carrying. Santana jogs out. We get a boost here because Bobby's mic'd up at ringside. This is a pretty infamous match where they tried this kind of manager mic. Vinceo said George Steinbrenner is at ringside because, of course, we're here in Tampa. As the Rooster dodges Tito but walks into a right hand, Bobby chastises Rooster as he eats a dropkick. Bobby talks to Steinbrenner and hints at firing Rooster, but he catches Tito low and then lands a double stomp to the gut. Tito comes back with a takedown, slugs away for two. Bobby keeps chirping as Tito blocks a sunset flip with a punch. Tito's fully in control, and Bobby's all sorts of frustrated. Rooster blocks a figure four and bails, but Bobby meets him and berates him out there and then shoves him. Rooster shoves him back as we take a break, and when we return, Tito suplexes Rooster back into the ring. Rooster takes Tito down and drops a knee for two as this edges along. Rooster hits a backbreaker for two and keeps pounding away and grabbing near falls, and then stuffs Tito with a nice pile driver for two. Hot shots him on the middle rope. Tito blocks a scorpion and starts to punch away and then clotheslines Rooster to the floor. Heenan bitches some more and slings Rooster back inside where he gets rolled up for the loss. Rooster and Bobby get into it after the match, and Bobby slaps Rooster, who bows up until it gets in his face and then punches his boss and screams at him. Rooster does this weird scream. He does it a lot where he sticks his chest out. I don't know if he's trying to be a rooster. I think he's done it even as Terry Taylor. He his arms go all the way back and his chest goes out. It's really, really weird when he kind of does his angry, I'm yelling at you face. So then he just shoots Bobby hard into the corner, punches the crap out of him. Jesse just shits all over him for beating up a manager. This was fine. The storyline stuff is fine. The Bobby stuff was the best part. And Tito's always solid. Rooster did his best. We're finally done with the Rooster Bobby stuff. But it's done. I mean, we'll see. But Rooster's clearly just made to be look like an idiot. I mean, just to his face. And he stands there like a moron and takes it. And then here he finally snaps. But they've done Terry Taylor zero favors with any of this shit. I went 2 stars, Peter.
Oh, my God. All right. I love this. And it had nothing to do with Bill Alfonso being the referee for this one. I was kind of expecting 9-1-1 to come out and choke slam him at some point, but that's just due to my ECW watching. miking Heenan for this match, and by the way, this came off a lot better than the time they did it with Sherry, and all she did was scream like she was, you know, having sex like Sonny or something like that. It's kind of like that one Bushwhackers match on that pay-per-view, I forget which one, where Heenan is just saving it with his running commentary throughout. And I have to say, it is extremely difficult for one man to keep up a monologue for that long. Trust me, I know a little bit about that. I like Rooster with the stun gun. That was a nice little bit of offense. But the George Steinbrenner stuff with Heenan is just magic. Yes. I wrote Steinbrenner plus Heenan equals magic. And this was a big month for Georgie because January of 89 is when he got pardoned by Reagan. So so Billy Martin wouldn't have that over him anymore by saying, you know, when he said Reggie Jackson's a born liar and the other one's convicted, referring to Steinbrenner.
That's right.
Now, as I'm seeing Steinbrenner there and knowing the Yankees, and I apologize, Rosero, because I have to bring this up. The Yankees were a contender in 88. 89, they had started to slip. So I'm thinking, Steinbrenner is here at wrestling, enjoying himself, and what was he up to with the Yankees? The day after this was taped, the Yankees signed free agent Andy Hawkins.
There you go, the Hawk.
And other signings that they had between when this was taped and when it aired, Wayne Tolleson, Dickie Knowles, Jamie Quirk.
The Q.
After that, they acquired Mel Hall in March, the only Mel more infamous for sexual misconduct than Mel Phillips. The finish was, I mean, it's just all storytelling, which is good, but my question is, and I don't want to call it a flaw because, you know, they could be up to other stuff. Where's the family to back up Bobby? Like, where's Haku to come down and just fucking rip this guy apart,
right? Yeah.
for doing that to Heenan? I guess maybe they're saving the proper Red Rooster angles, not for superstars, not for challenge, but for primetime wrestling.
Primetime wrestling, yeah.
And this is actually, just from a historical perspective, you don't see a lot of face turns on Saturday night's main event. And this is actually, I think, the first one since Animal Steel in the very first match in 85. So apparently only guys with animals or animal names can actually do this.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the Heenan, yeah, it's interesting. There's not a lot of continuity with some of the stuff here tonight. But yeah, you would have liked to see the Heenan family in force take out the Rooster. But maybe you could say that they didn't expect it, so they weren't at the ready, you know, and by the time it was done, it was too late. I wish they did something with Bobby and Steinbrenner, like, regularly, like, where maybe, like, they cut to Bobby, like, down in his house, like, planning, like, having a management meeting or something on how to run the family. It would be kind of cool to see them working together like that, but that that Yankee team's kind of the team I first, like, identify, like, 88, 89 is, like, when they first kind of started coming to periphery. I want to say, like, 88 might be the first year I went to the stadium to see a game. So that's all those guys you mentioned were kind of like the first group of guys I really remember seeing. And then of course Pags and some other ones, but anyway,
yeah, one year later Steinbrenner got suspended. So he couldn't go to, I guess wrestling was the only thing he could do for a few years.
He should have done it. And you could work an angle where Steinbrenner is with Heenan. And then eventually Steinbrenner turns face by firing Heenan because Heenan does something stupid. That'd be so awesome.
Could you see Stump Merrill ordering guys around?
Can you imagine if Heenan had like managed like the 1990 Yankees for a week? That would have been so great.
They should have let him do it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Tell him Mattingly,
or at least spring training.
Hair.
Let him run the team for a couple spring training games or something.
That would have been class. Yeah, this was very funny. I enjoyed this match a lot. I gave it 2 stars. The Bobby commentary is classic. So good. What's sad is we talk about, and JR, when we were doing the GWWE singles guys last year, it's like nobody nominated Terry Taylor. And
oh, no, he got nominated, but he didn't get, I think he got two.
He got two.
No one cared enough to give him the courtesy third vote, even though if you look at some of the scrubs that got, you know, look at Peter's list, and your list, you see some of the scrubs that got voted in, and him, you know. Fuck, I think Pete Sanchez might have been on that fucking list, but Terry Taylor couldn't get the third vote.
But I guess, I mean, obviously we're only doing WWE. We're not doing everything.
But still, everyone got three. Everyone was. It was like no one cared enough to give the guy a third vote to at least make the nomination list, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's funny. And this was actually a pretty decent match. You're talking about, two pretty good workers. Your match time was 7:27. So they got a decent amount of TV time. And the Bobby commentary is classic. And, I could easily see Peter, like a prime time where, Gorilla's alone in the studio and they cut to like throughout the show of, Bobby with a Yankee uniform on in Fort Lauderdale and, or moving guys around in the outfield, hey, Pasqua, go to right, it'd be tremendous. It made the thing. And I definitely think that, that this Rooster experiment, it probably could have gone on a little longer. But obviously they were needing to cultivate this before, it would, reach its peak. But the match itself was good. Tito's Tito. You're never going to get a bad match out of him. So, in ring was fine, but it served its purpose. But yeah, where's the rest of the family? Where's Andre? Where's, Haku, where's Rude? Like nobody's around. It's like very strange. They were in the locked closet with Mean Gene watching the monitor after Savage left, and they were all saying, "Oh, Bobby will be fine. It's only the Rooster." I don't know. But anyway, it served its purpose. Not a bad match though. 2 stars for me.
All right, Gene is with Mr. Perfect to make sure that Gene calls him that and not Kurt Hennig. He says there are no mistakes and is perfect. Perfect explains his brand new hold, the Perfect Plex, and says Coco will find that out tonight. And that brings us to our final match of the evening. That is Coco Beware taking on Mr. Perfect, a rematch from last month at MSG to close us out. Perfect saunters out for his first national showcase, and Jesse thinks this will be his toughest test so far because of Coco's speed. Coco comes out after the break. We get started with a flurry from the Birdman that ends with a dropkick and knocks Perfect outside. Perfect comes back and cracks Coco and starts to work him over, focusing on the neck. Coco comes right back with a pair of arm drags and the second coming after a fun crisscrossing. Perfect lands a shot to the gut and pounds away and then hits a nice standing dropkick to knock Coco to the floor. Coco battles back into the ring with a headbutt and lands a clothesline, but then misses a charge in the corner. Perfect gets the Perfect Plex to take the win. I thought it was a fun sprint. That Perfect gets a nice showcase win. Coco was good as always, and Perfect just has star written all over him. You can see it just kind of crackling off the screen here. I thought this was a surprisingly feisty little match. I went star and a half. Coco had a nice showing. Not quite to the level of the MSG battle where, Scott, you and I went 2.5, but still fun. And again, Perfect, just you can tell this guy's a rising star when you look at him on the show. Just kind of the way he carries himself, the way he's presented. You can tell Vince really thought he had something, and you could tell why he embarrasses Terry Taylor and treats Kurt Angle gold. Scott, that's very clear.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%, JR. I gave this match, I gave it a star only for timing purposes. And this is the other example I said about how televised versus non-televised. When we saw it on the last show at the Garden, I think they got like 11 minutes. Here they get a mere, let's see what they got here. They got 3:10. I mean, this is nothing.
Well, they had a round.
It's a very short template, but regardless of the match itself, you could tell that Perfect just has that look. He knows, he's not a dummy. He comes from a wrestling family. So he knows when you hit this stage, you got to amp yourself up to the next level. And he did. He's got the look. He has the look when he walks up down the aisle, sees the crowd. He knows what he's doing. He's not stupid.
He's got the look.
You got the look. Nah, nah, nah. But yeah, I mean, I gave it a star only because it wasn't the greatest thing on the planet. But we will see much better things out of Perfect Peter down the line. But this was just a template of what was to come.
I guess Steinbrenner didn't really give a crap about this match because you don't see him there at ringside anymore. Apparently, he had to go have dinner with Andy Hawkins to close that deal. Do we have a name yet for this slot on the show that is at the very end and we're establishing a new heel? Because they've done it. They've done it with Rude. They've done it with other guys. And Perfect, the new heel slot. There was a point where Vince corrected Jesse's grammar. I gave him an A+ for that. I forget what Jesse said. I probably should have wrote that down. I think he said like ridden or instead of rode. road or something like that. It took Perfect a while to get going because think about it. He comes in WrestleFest, and that's the end of July. And here we are. This airs in January. So we're almost to 6 months, and you're still waiting for him to kind of break through to be that intercontinental level guy. And it never really happens. He just kind of keeps beating guys in every match for a really long time until they're like, oh, okay, well, maybe we do have something here, and maybe we should push him a little bit
It's about a year, really. It's Survivor Series to Survivor Series. It's like that ramp up.
Yeah.
Because I think his like push really kicks off at Survivor Series 88 because he looks great in that match, and he kind of stands tall and survives. And then so after Survivor Series 89 is where they kind of begin his push in earnest with Hogan. So like to me, that year is really like his year of ramp time, which is a long time. Yeah, it's a long time. And then we look at other guys that have come in. And the heel slot thing is a good point because it continues on Survivor Series event. It's definitely a trope that they have that, you know, whatever, because, 11:30 to 1, right? So that 12:45 slot was usually the big kind of heel showcase.
Yeah. That's mostly because most people are in bed.
Correct.
So, if you forget, it's not a big deal. You can throw it on a syndicated show.
Did you have anything else, Peter?
Anything else, Peter?
Nah.
Okay. All right. After that, Gene is backstage with the Mega Powers talking about dissension. Hogan rambles on and says Savage was there when the chips were down, right when he was down to his last lick of the stick. Made me laugh. Macho shows up for the save. He rants on more about their unity and how they're one. Savage backs him up and is pissed about how the Towers treated Liz. Hogan says he felt upset as well when Liz was cuffed. And Savage says they're together all the way. And Hogan says they're united body, mind, and soul. So the Mega Powers are echoing the Spice Girls. to become one.
Yeah.
And Vince and Jesse wrap things up. Jesse says this is a cover-up by the Mega Powers, and Vince plugs our prime time main event coming in February. So that be that. Why don't we get to our awards as we wrap up our show here this evening. And we start, as always, with our match of the night. And for me, on this night, I went with Hogan Akeem.
Yeah, I liked Rooster and Tito too, but Hogan Akeem was the showcase match.
Yeah, I agree.
Peter?
I would have loved to have gone with Beefcake versus Bass, but it was something really missing in that match, like you said, with the chemistry. And Hogan Akeem, it was more about start. I'm going to go with Tito versus Rooster just because of everything that was going on there. You get two good professional wrestlers, and then Heenan providing a
running
commentary.
One good and one adequate. One good, one adequate.
Wow. Excuse me, limited ability.
There you go. All right, the Cousin Junior for the worst match of the night, I went Warrior Honky.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty awful.
All right. Our Andre the Giant Award for our MVP of the evening, I went with Randy Savage. I thought he was at his douchebag best here.
Yes. He's doing a good job returning the corner back to the way he used to be.
I'm actually going to go with a different douchebag, and I'm going to go with Heenan because, like I said, keeping that running commentary going during the match and making it funny for that entire time and the interaction with Steinbrenner, so good. So, yeah, he's my MVP.
Do you think there's any chance they put any of that in post?
Possibility.
Because they had a month now. I mean, I'm not taking away from it. It was still great, but they've had a month, so you wonder if they put any of it in afterward, you know?
I didn't look to see if like they looped any dialogue because you'd be.
It looked like he was talking.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he was talking, but I mean, you know, I didn't know if they changed any of what he said and had him cut some new audio clips. That's all.
I don't know.
Anyway, well, for me and you, Scott, Savage has won 3 in a row. So.
Yes, I saw that, and what, like 4 of the last 7?
Yeah, something like that. Oh. All right, Sandy Beach Award for the worst wrestler in the night. I went with Honky because he sucks.
Yeah, something. There's no doubt that the bloom fell off the rose and the whole garden's dead now.
Oh, I'm going with Warrior because at least Honky was good once. So there's at least the hope
there. I
thought
Warrior was
and
fine.
Warrior
here,
hasn't
though,
been good
night.
At all. Yeah, I can, maybe, but I don't like him.
Fucking Peter Meltzer over here. You going to call him the Anabolic Warrior next? All right, best moments. I went with Savage being a douche. You know, Rooster turning was fine, but to me the highlight was Savage I've had it narrowed down to a minute. It's like the end, kind of, where he's just like, nah. Or when Liz is back there, he's like, no, he's fine, he's fine, he's fine. And Liz goes out on her own. But I'm just going with Savage being an asshole the whole time.
Yeah, I agree. He was definitely doing a very good job of kind of turning the corner as we move ahead.
You know, I should make it Heenan's interaction with Steinbrenner, but instead, because I'm such a fan of the trope, I'm going to go with Beefcake shaving Bass's head, because that was very needed and brings us into our next award.
True, and that is the Morocco Award, so not the next one. Morocco Award for the most juiced up of the evening, and I actually went Beefcake on this one. Some stiff competition with Hogan and Warrior here as well, but I thought Beefcake looked the most bloated on this night. You could tell he was kind of cycling up for his big moment, but to me, he was the most. And I never pick Hogan because I feel like it's such a layup, and I'm kind of the same way with Warrior. Like, I take Warrior if he's kind of the only guy, but I feel like there's such layups. I try and pick, like, the guy that looked like he really cycled up for that night, and for me, that was Beefcake. So the guy that looks, like, bigger than he normally is what I usually try and lean toward.
I like that thinking. I mean, it's very hard to not give it to Warrior because he just looks the same all the time, but I think I noticed it more in the interview than I did in the match, but he definitely looked a little puffier than he normally does. I'll go with Beefcake on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Warrior again. And yeah, Warrior.
Okay. I think you should go back and revisit Beefcake on this one. All right, Patera Award for the worst hair of the evening. Ron Bass, I think, should be a clean sweep.
No doubt.
Do you think he purposely let it go and look awful just so when it got cut, it was, like, meant more?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt.
Yeah, they probably slipped him a few extra bucks just to get that out of there. Of course, you got to see all of his gross blade scars from Florida. Oh, yeah. From back in the day.
Dusty Rhodes wannabe.
The Mid-Atlantic roadmap.
Yeah.
All right, overall grade of the night. Again, not a great Saturday's Main Event. It was some fine angle stuff, match-wise, kind of lacking. We didn't really get that one big match. Some memorable stuff, but not super memorable. It's like middle ground. Like, Beefcake Bass is memorable, but not something that, like, jumps out at you as a seminal moment. Even this piece of the Mega Powers feud isn't like a key, like, this isn't in the video package at Mania. You know what I mean? So it's a good moment, but it's not a key moment. And, you know, honky ending, most people thought it was done anyway. And then Rooster, again, B level. So I went 4.5, which is a tick up from November, but still we're on a down slope here for the Saturday Night events. We've had a bit of a rough run. The October 88 one was fine, but these last two have not been good. Scott, what did you have?
Yeah, this was I mean, Hogan Akeem was good, the Savage stuff was good, and the Bobby Rooster stuff was good. Everything else was pretty middling. I'm gonna give it a 4. You need to get off to a good start. I know we'll have another big show coming up in a few weeks to really kick, you know, get the builds going for the spring. I feel like the January show has become a throwaway to a certain extent for Saturday's Main Event, like, just to kind of get their feet wet into the new year. This could have been better if they tried hard enough and put some different guys on. I give it a 4, Peter.
Yeah, I went with 4.5, and this is certainly more middling than I would have wanted it to be, given that it's 1989 WWF, and I pretty much love it from start to finish. It's got a hair angle. It's got the Mega Powers thing. And it's got that Steinbrenner-Heenan thing, but there's just something missing. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I think it's time for them to go back to the water slide and the water park like they did 3 years before.
They are missing the gimmicks. Yeah, they're missing the gimmicks on these shows.
Yeah, you know, this show would have been perfect for it, just to back you up quickly, Peter, because when they had shows that didn't have a whole ton of meaty storyline stuff, the gimmick of the night, the theme kind of saved it. When they don't have a gimmick and the show's flat, then everything's flat. So just to back what you're saying. But I'm sorry, continue.
No, I agree. I mean, back in the day, I hated the gimmick stuff because, like, no, just get to, like, the wrestling or whatever. But now I have this great appreciation for them actually trying to drown Elizabeth on television and stuff like that.
And we'll get back to it. In 90, we get back to it a little bit.
Yeah, we do.
So that'll be good. But no, I agree. They've lost. This almost felt like a check the box show for them. Like, I feel like they had everything really set from the Rumble till Mania, and they're really focusing on the main event instead of Saturday's Main. You know, so this almost felt like we just got to get by it and get to our big arc. That's what it felt like to me. So they're just kind of setting themselves up. So as a tee-up show, it's fine. But as a in a vacuum, it's just kind of there. All right, so that'll do that. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time here with the looking at Royal Rumble 1989. Mr. John D'Amato, of course, will be in their house, our pay-per-view guru. Scott, you got anything else this week? What do you got going on?
This week's quiet, but hop on, check out placementnation.com for the last couple of shows. The newest episode of the main event, Brother Nate and I talking about AEW and looking ahead to the Rumble this weekend, as well as NXT TakeOver. And also the In Memoriam podcast, myself, Andy Atherton, Steve Willey, and Timmy Capel. We memorialized those in pop culture that passed away this past year. And yeah, and then coming up next week is the next episode of the Year in Pop. Myself, Mr. D'Amato, and the Doctor, with Andy Atherton, we will look at the year 1973. There's a lot of interesting stuff there as well. So yeah, check it out, placementnation.com.
All right, very good. Chad and I were back last week with a brand new Wrestling War Zone, looking at World War III 95. So it's been excellent. Good to get back on rotation with Chad. We had a long layoff there due to his work schedule, but I think we got another new one possibly coming this week too. So be sure excellent. To peep that. And also last week, Aaron George and I had the newest No Holds Barred. It was his birthday edition. And Scott, we live watched the Jesse Ventura story, the NBC movie. So,
oh God,
we rambled quite a bit. We didn't really do like a full live watch, but it was on in the background as we went through our show. So you should definitely listen to that. That was a lot of fun. And I will plug a couple other things coming up here this week. There will be a new debuting podcast coming this week in the world of wrestling on the PlayStation Wrestling feed. And it's maybe touching on a promotion from down south known as WCW. So be sure to keep an ear out for that. And also keep an eye on all of our social media feeds as well toward the end of the week for some big news to drop. Place number 2B Nation on Twitter, Facebook.com/PlaceBNation. Check all that out because some big stuff happening. We'll cover more, Scott, in our next episode. I don't want to get into it too much here tonight, but just keep an eye out on things come Friday. Also, one last plug. I was also on the Pop feed over the last couple of weeks. A couple weeks ago, I was on The Great Debate with Atherton, Jordan Duncan, and the Cowboy. And then last week...
Very funny.
Thank you. And last week, I did an episode of Freak Out Drive-In. Jennifer Smith and I watched Suburban Commando. So take a look.
That was tremendous, by the way.
Thank you.
Please, I highly recommend listening to it. It was very, very good.
Thank you. Thank you. I had a great time. I always love watching that movie. I can, you know, she wanted me to try these different ones, but I'm like, look, if you want me to add value, I'm not going to add any value with any horror movies. So I tried to pick one that at least had a monster in it, an alien of some sort, so that I could add value. And I've seen that movie so many times that I'm like, I could tell you everything. So I enjoyed doing that. That was a lot of fun. So check that out on the Pop feed as well. Peter, what do you got going on?
Well, greetings from Allentown. Episode 99 is out right now. It is WCW Saturday Night on a Mothership from June 28th, 1997. I feel that's a pretty representative show of that year in WCW, covering a variety of topics, the lead up to Bash the Beach pay-per-view with Rodman and Hogan. So that means I got episode 100 coming this Thursday, which is on Monday Night Raw. Well, actually, I guess it was called Raw is War. From June 1st, 1998, which just so happens to be my favorite episode of Raw that there ever has been in Raw the 26 Raw? Years. Raw. Raw is War in the War Zone.
Is there a Brawl for All, though?
No, that's 4 weeks away from that. So it's the lead up to the King of the Ring and the night after the Over the Edge pay-per-view with that insane Austin.
Oh, June 1st. I'm thinking July. Okay, June 1st.
Yeah. Yep. Austin and Dude Love match. I got an Adam's Vision podcast with Steve Bennett coming up, covering Royal Rumbles 1988 through 98. We got to figure out a time to tape that in the next couple days. And give me a follow on Twitter at GF Allentown Pod.
Okay. And also be sure to visit Bigelow34.proboards.com, our message board home. We have the Year That Was 1996 project up and running, where we have a huge playlist already for January 96 featuring stuff that's accessible and some other stuff that we've dug up from various B and C shows. We got some WCW Prime matches. We got some main event, WCW Saturday Night, Worldwide, Superstars, Mania. We got stuff all over the place, all linked in there for you to watch. You share your thoughts on those matches, and then we'll have some category ranking as we hit the end of the year. Also wanted to just note that the GWE tag team results are starting to drop on the board as well. So just keep an eye out on social media or visit the board, and you can get involved in the discussion there too. And also, we had a couple of cool lists go up from Chad Campbell. His top 50 WWE matches of all time and his top wrestlers of the year 2000. Those results went up as well at the board, so you can join in and share your thoughts and lists as well there. I was pretty happy. I attended 6 of the 50 of Chad's greatest WWE matches of all time, so I thought it was a pretty good clip.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Okay, that'll do it. So I mentioned the social media earlier. Also, check out Instagram. We mentioned Jenny before. She's now running that account, so it's been active. So be sure to follow us on Instagram as well, Place Number 2B Nation. For Peter and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. Talk to you in a couple weeks. Take care. It's the only way.